Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Kaf B'Chodesh Malchishvan, Parashas Chayei Sarah, Tavshin Pei 5780, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 17 November 2019, webcasting from the first Jewish community in history that still doesn't get it. That's a point I repeatedly make because Israelis repeatedly still don't get it because they grow up in a community that is 100% Jewish and have no experience in their formative years of Gentiles. They have no experience of the fundamental hatred of Jews that has no foundation in truth. And thanks to the post-religious early Zionists, who, because they were post-religious, did not understand the hostility that has nothing to do with our behavior, nothing to do with an alleged concern for the welfare of the hallucinated Palestinians. That's just a smokescreen. The early leftist Zionists in particular believe that religion was nonsense. What matters are the material objective conditions of society, which can be changed. Anti-Semitism was the product of objective conditions that the Jews could change by moving someplace else and creating a new Jew who would be opposite. The opposite of the anti-Semitic caricature of the Jew, the Shylock, the money-grubbing capitalist who loves money more than anything else, a pale weakling one could physically abuse for fun, who posed no physical threat. So they've become men of the soil, farmers, soldiers, farmers with guns, defending themselves. They threw in the garbage can the laws and values of the Jewish nation that kept this people immortal, when all the other nations and empires that the Jews had lived in and had been abused by had disappeared down the memory hole of history. They believed that if they changed themselves, they would be rid of the accusations cast against Jews that led to horrible persecution. Indelible in my memory was my first visit to Israel in its 17th year, 2 years before the Six-Day War. I had no Zionist propaganda in my boyhood and youth. I had a strong Jewish sociological identity, growing up in schools where classes of 20 might contain two Jews, one of them me. I loved Leon Uris's Exodus, which came out at the end of the 1950s. That book made Natan Sharansky in the old Soviet Union, a youthful communist, turned him into a Zionist. That was all I knew of Israel, that book and the movie. And when I landed here, with no plans, except the knowledge I could work for room and board on a kibbutz, I arranged that with a day or two. I found a place through the Mapai office in Tel Aviv, hitchhiked south to Kibbutz Nir Am, where there was a unit of Nachlaim, soldiers. That's a unit in the army. I had no idea what Nachal was, no matter. These were boys and girls, young men and women my age. And this was before the Six-Day War, when Israel was not an attraction of foreigners. I was pretty much alone as an American when Israelis had yet the facility with English they have today. No matter. Within a week of working in the citrus groves and apple orchards by day, hanging out with my newfound friends in the evening, I knew I was home and would someday make my home in Israel. I was smitten. Not knowing a word of Hebrew beyond shalom when I landed, I nonetheless went in the company of those young, vital, beautiful, handsome Sabras, I felt, without understanding a word, as I felt among Jews in America. Similar faces, but physically more vital, a little taller, a little healthier. While their words were incomprehensible, their body language, facial expressions were completely recognizable. They spoke Hebrew with the music of Jews speaking English in New York, all coming from the Yiddish. All the traditional ethnic groups in New York have accents. On the radio, I can know right away if the guy's a New York Irishman, an Italian, a black, a Jew. And the music of the language of my newfound friends was my music. It was almost an out-of-body experience. These Sabras were middle-class Ashkenazim from Givatayim, a comfortable suburb of Tel Aviv, educated in government schools, controlled by Mapai, the dominant Social Democrat Party in everything. But when it came to the subject of anti-Semitism, I was stunned, surprised, shocked, almost depressed. They had been taught that the Jews were the cause of anti-Semitism. By their beliefs and their behaviors, they made themselves hateable. In that time, I met a girl who almost married. She had been raised a communist in a communist household in Israel, who insisted she was not a Jew, but an Israeli. Judaism is a religion, she said, and she was an atheist. Ergo, she was not a Jew. Think of the late Shulamith Aloni, bosom buddy of Shimon Peres, the late Shimon, who wanted the Ministry of the Interior to remove the word Jew from her birth certificate in the space marked nationality. She wanted to be registered as an Israeli, not a Jew. And so I was flabbergasted as I got to know these Israelis who I had been given to understand were proud Jews. They were anything but. I shared identity with them, but their understanding of anti-Semitism, I thought, was shockingly fit for anti-Semites. The secular Zionists did not dismiss the hatred, but went along with it and set out to rectify the impression by changing the very nature and behavior of the Jews so not to be hateable anymore. Step one, the Torah goes into the garbage can with its claim that we are the chosen people. That only makes the non-Jews hate us. Next, you junk the dietary laws that work to keep Jews a separate community. Catholic men and women enter monasteries and convents to isolate themselves from society. We Jews isolate ourselves another way. We remain in society but do not break bread with non-Jews except on our terms. We do not socialize, that is, with the Gentiles. By contrast, to my newfound friends, I had experienced anti-Jew behavior new from the first, though I did not have the words, the concepts, the intellectual ability to express what I experienced. I knew from the first that anti-Semites were nuts, that I did nothing to make them hate me. They hated me because they hated Jews in general, for having killed Jesus, I guess, when even as a little boy I thought this was a ridiculous idea. Did the Jews way back when kill Jesus? I don't know. I have no idea. I wasn't there. Maybe they did. But I had nothing to do with it. My late mother once, as a girl in the Bronx 100 years ago, said she passed a Catholic girl in the neighborhood on the sidewalk who pointed at her as they passed and said, "You killed God." In a word, I knew from the get-go that there was something wrong, not with me, but with them. I did not deserve the daggers of hatred they stared at me when they discovered I was a Jew. The problem was in their heads, not mine. Jump cut now to Israelis to this day who still don't get it. Last week's firing of hundreds of rockets at us, each one meant to murder a Jew or two at random, was answered by Israel bombing and destroying inanimate objects and some 30 wild asses of Muslim terrorist men. And apparently, a whole family was killed in what normal military lingo labels collateral damage, a deliberate euphemism for unintended accidental fatalities, another euphemism, killing people by mistake. I also once came across the military fact, I think it's a fact, that in warfare it's not unusual for, don't quote me, I don't know, 25% of your casualties will be the victims of their comrades in arms in error. They die from, quote, another euphemism, friendly fire. And so in response to those 50 hours last week of the IAF and IDF pounding the enemy, warfare by assassination, call it tweezer warfare, in which Israel never strikes at groups of enemies in uniform or civilian clothing at random, the howls of war crime was immediately in the air when that family of eight in Deir al-Balah, an area inside the strip, was obliterated. Not only did the anti-Jew goyim point the finger of willful murder on the part of the killer Jews, the Israelis think the proper response is to refute the charge and promise an investigation to prove them wrong, but miss the underlying and irrational hatred that precedes the accusation of allegedly deliberate slaughter of a family of ancient Palestinians. Immediately on the news of this accidental bombing, I think it was on Shabbos, the International Criminal Court in The Hague kicked in, opened a preliminary investigation into Israel's battlefield tactics, like the Goldstone Report, I guess. This will not be the first time anti-Jews insinuate that the Jews engage in criminal warfare. Usually it's the charge that the Jews statistically use more force than is necessary because, well, by implication, it's their evil desire to cause pain to the innocent Palestinians, the victims of their Zionism.
b'shalom ateret ba'ala gam b'simcha u'b'tzala bohi b'shalom ateret
Yeah, following that collateral damage, the United Nations coordinator for Middle East peace, stationed in Jerusalem, Nikolai Mladenov, though what he exactly coordinates is a mystery, he issued a statement, quote, "There is no justification for attacking civilians in Gaza or elsewhere. Such a tragedy. I call on Israel to move swiftly with its investigation," close quote, because Israel announced it already had begun one. Of course, the IDF began an investigation in order to learn what went wrong, but unfortunately, the IDF said no more, leaving out the possibility that it will discover an evil intention to massacre families of innocent civilians. What it should have said is that the investigation is an internal operational probe whose findings will not change the truth that this was collateral damage. And anyone who thinks otherwise is an ugly anti-Semite. The IDF statement read, "According to the information available to the IDF at the time of the strike, no civilians were expected to be harmed. The IDF is investigating the harm caused to civilians by the strike," close quote. And I want to say, give me a break. Of course no civilians were expected to be harmed. To think otherwise is to accuse us Jews of the deliberate murder of human beings posing no threat to us. What the IDF, what the government, has to say in such moments is that regardless of our investigation, the blood of this family is on the heads of their fellow Muslims in the Islamic Jihad cult who fire hundreds of rockets into our homes to murder us at random, about which war criminality Comrade Mladenov says nothing, and perhaps because the Israeli government says nothing. The accusation is that we deliberately massacred a whole family for no good reason, except perhaps to satisfy our evil urges, licensed by our Jewish religion that allows us to murder any Gentiles we want. The IDF spokesman might have laced his statement with a little acid, such as reminding the world that we Jews are believed to love money more than anything else, and we would not want to waste precious ammunition on people posing us no threat. To kill them just for the pleasure of it? The hell of it? On Sabbath, one of the weekend newspapers wrote up an Egyptian man raised to be a fanatical Muslim who one day woke up in his teens and has become a major supporter of Israel. He discovered the truth. He says he was taught in school, in the mosques, that, quote, the source of all evil in the world is the Jews. This is the mindset of the Muslim priests in their pre-modern robes in Tehran. But you will never hear an Israeli address this abysmal, medieval, archaic, primitive, superstitious hatred of Jews that is central to Islam. Quoting from Haaretz, Israeli military sources said the army was unaware of the family's presence in the building when conducting the strike and that it had intended to hit Islamic Jihad infrastructure only, close quote. A neighbor of the family that was killed was quoted, quote, the airstrike intentionally targeted civilians. I read that and was fascinated by the obtuse blindness to the reality that the reason Israel was bombing in the Strip at all was the aggression of Islamic Jihad, its deliberate firing of hundreds of missiles at Israeli civilians at random. It was Islamic Jihad that was guilty of this neighbor's accusation. Don't the Israelis see that these accusations are nothing but classical anti-Jew psychological projection? Like Hitler, who accused the Jews of conspiring to overrun the whole world when it was Adolf and his Germans on fire with a war cry. They were the ones who wanted to do that. And what yours found, and not for the first time, here, was the eerie coincidence of last week's events and allegations about killing the innocent with the guilty, for that was last week's Parsha, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. Hashem, the great multitasker in the sky, not only orchestrated events in that Parsha freighted with a lesser improper sexual conduct, also considered was the ethical conundrum of the innocent suffering with the guilty. That was Avraham's first appeal to the Almighty. Israel says it will investigate this incident, but it should also make clear that whatever its findings from an operational standpoint, this was collateral damage, and the ultimate bearer of guilt for the destruction of this family, lies on the heads of Islamic Jihad that once again launched rockets deliberately in an effort to kill Jewish non-combatants at random. Not one of those missiles targeted a military target in Israel. Every one was deliberately fired at civilian communities. But about this fact, UN coordinator Mladenov in Jerusalem was silent, and in The Hague, the UN-invented International Criminal Court investigates only this one Israeli incident and not one of the hundreds of rocket launches. And Israel is remiss in not shining a light on the anti-Semitism of this behavior. This wholly unfair persecution of Israel via allegations of cruel, sadistic, and immoral mass murder is nothing but this year's way of smearing Jews with the kind of guilt used to smear us for killing a Jew from Nazareth. It is this facet of the violence against us that Israelis are ill-equipped to understand. Islamic Jihad said, quote, Israel is responsible for the consequences of the ongoing aggression against the resistance and the Palestinian people in Gaza, close quote. And Israelis still do not grasp this Muslim tactic of hiding behind the verbal hologram of the Palestinian people in Gaza. Islamic Jihad could not be more blatant in advertising its ideology, which is age-old belligerent Islam, and only hides behind the verbal mask of Palestinian nationalism, which deceptions Israelis still don't see through.
מקום חדש שייתן לי משמעות. מחפש מקום חדש, מרגיש פה בגלות. שם אני ארגיש אחד, שם לא אהיה יותר לבד. לא רואה כיוון באור העמון, לא רואה כיוון, הכל פתאום חסום. רוצה להשתחרר, להיות משהו אחר. בבית האסורים קורא לך את פניך, לא רואים שתוציא אותי עכשיו למקום שבו אוכל סוף סוף לנשום, כמו מים שזורמים בנהר. רוצה המקום המיוחל שישנה את הגורל. כמו חמוש בבית האסורים קורא לך את פניך, לא רואים שתוציא אותי עכשיו אל המקום שבו
listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. And now, in a related story to the foregoing about the Israeli difficulty in confronting the classic hatred of Jews lurking beneath the masquerade of Palestinian nationalism, the French, no less, are committing suicide via their blindness and denial to the menace of Islam that all demographic projections predict will conquer France in the next 30 years. I have in mind the excellent French academic Guy de Millière, who publishes regularly in the On the Gatestone website, who not only reports in this latest posting on the demographic process, but the denial of the French in the face of Muslims who do not deny their goal, which is conquering France, and really the whole world. In this latest article, which willy-nilly relates to Israel, he cited the imam in Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem last month. In the year 2050, France will be an Islamic country. We believe that Muslims will have a country that will bring Islam, its guidance, its light, its message, and its mercy to the people of the West through jihad for the sake of Allah. At the time of the Ottoman Empire, the Muslims had conquered Poland and Austria, and the call to prayer was recited there. The Islamic nation is able to recover its original identity and spread Islam. Allah willing, the means at our disposal are the conversion to Islam and the payment of the jizya tax, that is, infidels must pay for refusing to convert, or we will ask the help of Allah to fight the infidels. Close quote. De Millière also added the fact that a growing number of French people are converting to Islam, and quote, one can see in the streets white European people wearing Islamist clothing, close quote. Unfortunately, de Millière used the term Islamist, which is as phony and dishonest as Islamophobia. It's a fact that Muslims themselves do not use this term, Islamist or Islamism. It was Western non-Muslim academics like Daniel Pipes who fostered the invention of the words Islamist and Islamism when Muslims themselves make no such distinctions. Plainly, it seems to me that what Pipes and others were up to was painting a portrait of Islam in which the violent ones are isolated as extremists and therefore unrepresentative of Islam as a whole, which is a dubious contention. We just heard the Imam of Al-Aqsa Mosque. Are we to believe he's not representative of mainstream Islam? On what grounds are we to believe that? On the contrary, Steve Emerson in the Investigative Project, who watches, monitors Islam in the States, he's closer to the truth when he highlights sermons on Fridays in mosques everywhere in the States and elsewhere where hatred is stirred up against Israel, as mentioned before, and the Jews as the source of all evil in the world. When 60% of the Arabs after 9/11 believed it was a Mossad operation meant to get people to hate Arabs, it's a reasonable assumption that the same 60%, the mainstream, are in tune with these sermons that they hear in their mosques and read about Jews in their Quran. This imam in Al-Aqsa is not a fringe figure, but representative of this dreadful religion, this so-called, this plagiarized version of Judaism, Judaism burglarized and perverted. In my book, Phantom Nation, I quote Winston Churchill, who as a 20-something soldier in the army in Afghanistan wrote two books about fighting the Muslims. This was in the 1890s, and he called Islam the most retrograde force in the world. And I just came across a quotation from President Teddy Roosevelt, who had to deal with the kidnapping in 1904 of Greek-American playboy Jan Perdicaris and his stepson Cromwell, kidnapped in Morocco by an Arab bandit gang led by Mulli Ahmed Raisuli, kidnapped in an attempt to force the Sultan to meet his demands over internal power structures. President TR sent 7 ships to Morocco from the Mediterranean fleet. The British sent ships. They got involved. Spain got involved. In the end, the Sultan capitulated and Perdicaris went free. In 1916, Roosevelt wrote, quote, whenever the Mohammedans have had complete sway, wherever the Christians have been unable to resist them by the sword, Christianity has ultimately disappeared. If the people of Europe had not possessed a military quality with, and gradually a growing superiority, over the Mohammedans who invaded Europe, Europe would be at this moment Mohammedan and the Christian religion exterminated, close quote. Well, it looks like what the old Rough Rider feared is coming true another way. Europe is being peacefully invaded and colonized inside by the Muslims because the Europeans have not only lost a military spirit, they have no religion anymore to stand up to the religion overrunning them. Israel, for its sake, must see through the lie of a Palestinian nation with a right, with rights that Israel has to be nice to. Israel should sound the tocsin to the whole world of the menace of militant Islam.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it. Until Tuesday, I'm afraid we might have a minority government with the Arabs by then. God forbid. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.